Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing the housing halt, low-cost healthcare, and delinquent debtors.
That's right, Joel. This is our Friday flight where we tackle what we believe are the most pertinent stories to get to this week. The stories that we think are going to impact your money the most. And by the way, happy Black Friday to everybody. This is it's the day for sales, man.
Yeah, I guess it is. I'm not going shopping today personally.
I'm looking out for sales. I've got a few items on my list. I'm not going to go in person.
Yeah.
I feel like we've arrived to the point to where in my mind Cyber Monday isn't hardly a thing because so many retailers are offering sales online. Like it used to be the special thing where online retail was like a separate, just a different way of seeing the world.
And the deals were always better in person for a number of years,
right,
but no longer.
But now, just the way folks, for the most part, more folks are shopping online. And so there's a lot of sales out there on Black Friday.
Yeah. People need to be careful because while deals exist, and I agree, like start buying your presents earlier. We've talked about this. You're going to save more money. If you start earlier because the sales are better, if you wait till mid to late December, you're likely going to pay more for that stuff. But you can also overdo it, right? And there's a lot of temptation on Black Friday to stock up for some stuff for yourself.
Stick with
you don't need it.
The items on your watch list for your family and friends. And better yet, I think I saw there's a ranking done of different states and how enthusiastic they are towards Black Friday. And like at the bottom of the list were like Alaska and Montana, which makes sense.
Yeah.
They've got other things to worry about. They've got like staying warm at the top of their list.
That's right.
And grizzly bears. surviving that kind of thing.
So maybe if bear traps go on sale, they're in. You know?
Be more like Alaska and Montana.
Right, yeah. I'm sure Hawaii, too. Is Hawaii, are they into Black Friday? They got to be down low.
I don't even know. I didn't
see. I wonder if continental United States, it's just the shipping's a little more difficult to get to Hawaii and Alaska. So
more like a heartland thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, yeah. Best of luck to everybody out there on this Black Friday. Staying warm, but also avoiding spending too much. And Matt, real quick, I wanted to mention that the good folks at Capital One, they tried to lower my credit limit on a credit card the other day. And so they sent me an email. They gave me a heads up. And they're like, they hinted that we're thinking about doing this.
Had you not gotten in there and updated your information?
No, I had. I'd done that too.
Because they always prompt you at the beginning. And I'm always like, I'll do it later.
Right.
Or remind me later, whatever. just like the software updates on my computer that I always dismiss that I need to do.
No, they told me that, hey, you haven't been using your credit card enough, and so we've got this like massive credit limit for you, but we're going to turn that back if you don't start using it, and we're going to do this like audit of your account, basically.
Ooh.
And so they didn't call it an audit, because if they had, that would have freaked me out.
Yeah, it always sounds a little scarier when you hear that word.
Yeah, but so basically they're like, we're gonna check this out unless you actually tell us not to.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, hey, yeah, no, let's not.
Please don't.
But it did remind me that some of those credit cards that I have, I get used to using the same three cards basically most of the time. And that in particular is a card I've had a long time. I've had a long relationship with Capital One, but I don't really use that card much anymore because it doesn't provide the top tier benefits. And so
it's not a card that's in your wallet. That's more like a top drawer of the desk credit card. Where it's sitting there.
Is exactly.
It like one of those.
But I just need to use that occasionally just to register activity. So it's a good reminder to folks out there, you know, put those credit cards that you have that you don't use very often, make them automatically pay for certain things. I've got to remember to do this now. Sign up to pay something, two or three things with this credit card that are low level, just to kind of keep it active in my credit mix. But
nice. I actually did that recently with a card I infrequently use. I use that card. I set it up to pay the Peach Pass, which like a very, it's like we don't use it very often, but like maybe once or twice a year we'll get a charge because it has to like re-up that account, which is, it's like the pay-per-use HOV lane, basically, or in and around Atlanta. But it's such a small dollar amount, but it also keeps it alive, keeps it fresh.
Yep. For sure. So
I like it, right? And of course, I mean, the reason you don't want your credit limit decreased is if you have less credit that's available to you, that means if you go along with your typical spending, you're going to see a higher utilization rate of your credit that's available to you, which will technically lower your credit score, which is something that you want to avoid doing.
For sure. Yep. So, and we've got, old episodes on credit scores if you want to go back and listen, if you want to know the intricacies of how they work, because it is like it's not intuitive necessarily.
Right.
You would think, oh, more credit available, that that you might be a riskier credit.
That's a bad thing, actually, right?
Yeah. A lot of people think that. So there's a lot of non-intuitive things we've covered before in episodes on credit scores. But Matt, let's move on. Let's get to the Friday Flight, the sampling of stories we found interesting this week. And we talked about student loan forgiveness being on hold last week because of a court in Texas. But there is actually some new news report on that front. No, sadly, we don't know whether or not student loans are going to be able to be forgiven via the Biden administration mandate. That's still in limbo through the court system. But the Biden administration has just announced that they're going to be extending a pause on federal student loan payments while these legal challenges remain. So, payments were set to resume January 1st, but now we're just not sure what the start date for those payments is going to be again. Now they're going to be set to resume 60 days after we know whether student loan forgiveness is actually going to happen or not. So whether once this court case is resolved or once student loan forgiveness is implemented, now what's happening is that payments are supposed to resume 60 days after that resolution comes to pass. So this student loan pause kind of feels perpetual at this point, and who knows how much longer it goes. Apparently there is a June 30th deadline where if we haven't figured out what's going on with the forgiveness proposal from the Biden administration, that payments are going to resume 60 days after that date. So I guess that would mean in end of August. But yeah, there's still a lot of moving parts, and it certainly looks like from where we're sitting right now, student loan payments are not going to resume, much to the happiness, I'm sure, of many at the beginning of the year. But yeah, there's something else to talk about on that front too, because scammers are on the prowl trying to use this kind of limbo time, as it were, to steal money from anxious student loan borrowers. There was a story in the Wall Street Journal about this week, and internet thieves are touting that they can fast track forgiveness, or that they can even make a bigger chunk of your student loans go away completely, like more than what the Biden administration has promised. So some scammers are saying, you know what, we're gonna help you get $60,000 worth of student loan forgiveness, which sounds really nice. Folks who hear the pitch might get really stoked, but the reality is that it's too good to be true. And so no matter how these folks try to contact you, we say don't respond. The U.S. Department of Education, they're not going to reach out to you asking for sensitive information over the phone, like your social security number or anything like that. All communication is going to happen via verified government email addresses. And so if there are any changes on the forgiveness front, you'll hear from it there. You'll also hear us discuss it here on the show. But just be careful out there, because there are more and more of these individuals. Whenever there's like big money at stake, Matt, some sort of government forgiveness thing, a lot of people come out of the woodwork and they want to like steal money from unsuspecting victims.
That's right. It's important to keep an eye out anytime there's an opportunity out there for thieves. But there has been one other change on the student loan front this past week, which could make it easier for some folks to jettison their student loans altogether. And that's the new guidelines that the Biden administration has set, which will likely make it easier for those who have student loans, for judges and courts, for them to decide whether or not those folks are going to be eligible for bankruptcy. Right now, the water's kind of murky.
Or at least for their loans to be discharged in the process of bankruptcy.
Exactly, yeah. Like, basically, it's very unclear as to what is allowed. And basically, it's like student loans have, until now, been almost impossible to discharge within bankruptcy proceedings, largely in an attempt for recent college grads to not be able to gain the system, right? Like where they're trusting that their future earnings would be higher thanks to that handy new degree.
Yeah, it's like trying to declare bankruptcy when you're 23, making $20,000 a year with $150,000 worth of debt.
Knowing
that eventually you're going to
make bank.
Yeah.
Exactly. But so what that means, though, is it's incredibly difficult. Stats find that only 300 out of 250,000 folks who filed for bankruptcy actually had their student loans discharged along with their other consumer debts. But luckily, that is set to change, and hopefully there'll be a lot of folks who are going to be able to receive some of this relief. And these new guidelines, they're going to set some of these specific requirements for proving financial distress. In the past, it was much more nebulous, but anytime there's transparency and clear rules as to what the game is that you're playing, I am all for that.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it's student loans have been kind of a noose around people's neck, really, and it was impossible to get rid of. That 300 out of 250,000 stat is sobering.
Yeah.
Basically, nobody can get any sort of dischargement of student loans via bankruptcy proceedings. That is set to change. It's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out and what percentage of people are going to be able to go that route in the future to get rid of student loans. I think people are going to be a lot more interested in that moving forward. And as we see more progress with these new rules and how they're playing out, we'll certainly continue to weigh in on that.
Sure.
But let's move on, Matt. Let's talk about cars, because according to our friends at Consumer Reports, electric vehicle reliability is going down. Prices, yet on the other hand, are going up in a big way. But EVs are just not as good as they have been in recent years. And one of the main reasons is apparently because automakers are using the advent of new electric vehicle styles to launch other new technologies at the same time. Basically, they're learning as they go. The auto manufacturers are. And we're the guinea pigs as people who are buyers of vehicles.
Don't like that at all.
And you and I, we're fans of electric vehicles. We think that they're largely going to replace internal combustion engine vehicles in the coming decades. I'd be shocked if that wasn't the case. They're fun to drive. There are fewer maintenance requirements. Like, electric vehicles are awesome in so many ways. But we're right in the middle of this shift taking place, this pivot. And consumers out there, we've got to be careful and we've got to do our own due diligence. Consumer Reports, we would say, is a great resource, albeit one that you have to pay for unless you go to the library. But it's a great place to kind of look up and to see which specific vehicles are having issues or which ones get great reviews. But like friend of the show, Mike Quincy, who works for Consumer Reports, told us on episode 589, he said buying the first version of any vehicle means you're likely buying more problems, which is true. That's historically true for cars. And it's even more true of electric vehicles right now. Plus, by the way, it means you're buying a new car, which of course is going to cost you more. So we would say reliable used cars are still the best bet for most folks.
Absolutely.
And you have to be careful if you are in the market, you're looking to get into you want to trade in a gas-powered vehicle for an electric vehicle. You just have to be careful, because you don't want to be buying one of those first models that has like copious problems that you're going to be dealing with for years to come.
Exactly. Those new electric vehicles with new tech.
Yeah.
By the way, let's talk about which cars retain their value the best, because I see cars. They just released a survey and they found that the Jeep Wrangler, it takes the top two spots as two different models when it comes to depreciation. Turns out over 5 years, these puppies, they only lose something like 7%. 8 to 9% of their value, which is incredibly impressive, especially when you consider the national average, which is closer to 33%. And so we felt this is worth sharing because this is why we are so keen on our listeners out there to buy these older cars that have already taken a significant depreciation hit. Because with the average new car selling for like close to $50,000, you're losing like nearly $16,000 just in depreciation alone over those first few years.
Yeah.
Some fancier luxury cars out there like Beamers, Jaguars, they have models that lose more than 50% of their value in that time, which is insane.
Yeah.
We're talking like $30,000 to $50,000 in the case of those vehicles.
Just in depreciation costs that you're eating over a few years' time.
It's ridiculous.
Insane.
Yeah. It's not a cost that car buyers often consider, but money savvy folks out there will minimize the depreciation hit that they take on with their automobiles, with the purchases that they're making. And it makes all the sense in the world too. Like I was thinking about how the fact that the Jeep Wrangler, it has such an iconic look. It makes sense that they're not going down in value. They're not depreciating because they look the same.
They really do.
They look the same now that as they did a few years ago. As
you
they
can
did
barely tell
10
like
years ago.
The 80s, the 90s, the early
2000s. I know.
They look very, very
much
the
same. I love it. As opposed to some of these more luxury models where, they're updating them constantly. And because they're luxury brands, what you're seeing, it's a status symbol, essentially, right? Like you are only buying the new thing because you can afford it. And what you're demonstrating to your neighbors and the people you're passing on the freeway is that, I have the ability to spend this kind of, it's conspicuous consumption, basically. Like you don't have to buy that thing, but you're choosing to. But dang, what an expensive way to signal how much money you got.
Well,
I don't like it.
And you're right that most people don't think about car depreciation and they don't factor that into their sort of overall net worth. And so they're just like, I'm just going to upgrade my vehicle when I need one or when I want one.
Mm-hmm.
But if the most money savvy folks consider their cars as an expense and they take car depreciation into account because it is, when you look at that headline number, if you tell someone you're going to lose $16,000 over the next 3 or 4 years because that car is going to go down in value, like that's just not something that registers in the same way as gas prices as we're driving around town.
Yep.
But it should be factored more into our decision than gas prices because it's going to cost us more than gas will over 3 years too. So
yeah, it's almost as if at the new dealership lots, just like you have the big signs and 500 point font that tells you the price per gallon.
Yeah.
What if they just had the average depreciation of the vehicles that happen to be on the slot?
No, they're not going to say. They don't want to make that public knowledge.
Completely change the game
and
how it is that folks approach, especially buying new vehicles.
Yeah, and it should impact which vehicle we purchase, but it should also impact the age of vehicle we decide to purchase. And if you're in money gear 6 or 7 and you've got the money on hand to pay cash for one of these nicer vehicles and you don't care, or you plan to drive it for a really long time, then it's a different story, and I think you can make that decision, but make it with your eyes wide open.
Yeah, I don't even think you have to be in that high of a money gear, because if it's like your splurge and you've got the money set aside in order to make that purchase, I'm okay with someone who isn't a big time earner if it's something that they've saved up toward over a course of year. At some point, we came up with a rule of thumb to help folks like measure their income plus their net worth or something like that. We ought to scrape that back up.
Yeah.
But it just depends on who you are and the type of value that you put on new vehicles. I guess I'm saying this because we're kind of crapping all over luxury cars, and I don't want to yuck on someone else's yum. But you need to make sure that you are in the financial position to be able to handle that kind of expense.
And even if you have the cash, like make sure. Okay, cool. Do I want this asset I'm buying to depreciate this rapidly,
mm-hmm.
and to basically like sink half of what I put into it?
Yeah.
It's gone. It's evaporated.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's okay to do that as long as you know that that's what you're getting into. But
totally.
let's talk about healthcare for a second, Matt, because open enrollment is happening nationwide right now. And we've talked about a couple of helpful solutions over the years. If you don't have insurance through your employer, if you're buying on the open marketplace, a lot of folks are actually going to find that healthcare.gov is the best place to turn. But so much depends on your specific situation, your household size, and your income in particular, like how inexpensive your healthcare plan is actually going to be. And we would say it's well worth your time to go through the steps in order to get quotes because of the extensive subsidies that the federal government is currently offering. And I found this really helpful calculator, Matt, over at the Kaiser Family Foundation, which can help people figure out what their likely subsidies are going to be, what they're going to qualify for, and how much that's actually going to lower your premium amount. Because if you go through healthcare.gov first and foremost, you're going to have to submit a lot of information. It's going to take probably 25-30 minutes to fill out that application. So if you want just like a quick idea, understanding of what you're likely to pay once you go through all those steps, well, that Kaiser Family Foundation calculator can really help you assess that based on literally just 30 seconds of plugging stuff in. So I think it's really helpful as people are shopping the open market. They want to save money on premiums. They also want to limit their overall healthcare expenses for the year. I think this calculator can really help people, you know, make the most of their healthcare budget.
That's right. And what if, though, you've got insurance through your employer? Well, that's not necessarily cheap either. healthcare price shock, like this is still a reality for many folks who are in that scenario where you're expecting, you know, I don't know, it depends on the employer that you're with. Some employers are covering your healthcare costs
all the
wholesale.
But a lot of them aren't.
A lot of them aren't, though, and you're still having to pay out of pocket, pay a ton of money out of pocket.
I talked to a friend recently, Matt, and he said, you automatically think that the people who have health insurance provided through their work, you know, it's pretty easy for them, right? They got it covered. The employer's
it's kind of the default
60 or 70%
assumption.
But considering how expensive healthcare has gotten,
wasn't for him.
Even though, well, it's his premiums were still like more than $500 a month for his family. Like it's still prohibitively expensive, even for folks who are having it subsidized by their employer in many ways.
Yeah, well, you know, the best way to be able to lower your costs if you are in that boat is to choose a high deductible healthcare plan. At least for some folks out there, because a huge part of that, there's the bonus that you'll be able to sock money away into an HSA. And by the way, make sure that if you do have money in an HSA, that you are actually treating that account more like a retirement account.
Yep.
I was talking with some folks this past weekend, and we got to talking about HSAs like you do. And I was surprised that nobody there knew that you can actually invest the money that's in your HSA as opposed to it sitting there as cash.
Yep.
And so make sure to do that.
It's the great secret.
It's, yeah, triple tax advantage, baby. And those high deductible healthcare plans, obviously, they're going to lower your premiums, but you're going to need to make sure that you've got more money socked away for those potential out-of-pocket expenses.
Yeah. And one of the things that we've talked about when it comes to insurance, Matt, like a lot of these insurance products are necessary for us to have to like protect the smart financial moves we've been able to make, right? So something like life insurance, like term life insurance is important. Mm-hmm. It's important to have health insurance, right? So in case something catastrophic happens, like you're not completely wiped out. But the thing is too, you wanna make sure you have the right coverage and that you're self-insured to a certain extent, limiting your out-of-pocket costs, hopefully, over the years on average. And you might have a year that requires more spending on healthcare, which stinks. You just have to be prepared for that. You have to be self-insured, have the money in the bank to make sure that high deductible health plan is going to work for you. You have to work in conjunction with it, saving and planning for those expenses.
That's right.
But we've got more stories to get to, Matt, including we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening in the housing market. Mortgage rates have actually come down a little bit recently. Is that kind of, what sort of effect is that having? We'll talk about that and more right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we are back from the break, and Joel, we'll get to that housing halt story here in a second, but first we've got our ludicrous headline of the week, and this one is from the New York Federal Reserve, and it reads, balances are on the rise, so who's taking on more credit card debt? Which I found kind of humorous, Joel. This is like exactly the type of candid and plain-spoken title that you would expect from the Fed, and so we're here to pump it up a little bit, to take it up a notch.
Jazz it up.
Because we've talked about how Fed rate hikes, how they're impacting many areas of our lives, and we're now seeing credit card delinquencies ticking up. Balances are on the rise in a big way, in large part due to increased spending and higher APRs on your credit cards. Basically, the cost of carrying that debt has gotten much more expensive, and it's likely to go up even more in the coming months. And so we are here to make a big deal out of this tiny little headline that doesn't sound very ludicrous, because this is fundamentally one of the worst things that you can do with your money. It's basically the opposite, the exact opposite of investing, right? Well, like where instead of receiving a solid rate of return, you are paying out the nose for consumer purchases. We want you to avoid credit card debt like the plague. And if you have any, this is something that we want you to focus on paying off. But yeah, we felt this is a good story to focus on because even though the headline in and of itself is not ludicrous, the underlying principle is what we're talking about here. We want folks out of debt, in particular out of credit card debt.
Yeah, and it's not that we're against credit cards. Like using your credit cards judiciously is what we recommend.
That's the wise use of credit cards.
We actually think that they're the best form of payment. Maybe we'll do a whole episode on that soon. But it only makes sense though if you pay your credit card off in full on time at the end of the month. But it's worth pointing out too that some credit cards are better than others, and store credit cards actually suck the most. Like those cards already come with higher rates of interest, but with rates on the rise, some of the interest rates on some of these store cards, Matt, are topping 30%. So whereas the average normal credit card, the non-store branded credit card, is somewhere around like 19%, we're talking about some of these store cards being at 30.
That's which a lot more.
Yeah, so just like every time you buy something with that store credit card and you don't pay it off, you're paying a lot of money, a lot of extra money for the item you're buying. And so while you might be tempted to open up a store card while you're shopping this holiday season, know that they're inferior and that they come with worse terms. They come with higher interest rates. So while we always want you to avoid credit card debt, we want you to avoid racking up debt on store cards even more than we want you to avoid racking up debt on a regular credit card. But just avoiding debt on any sort of plastic is ideal. Like that is the best place to be.
Absolutely. And going back to the top of the show when we're talking about Black Friday, don't be tempted. Yep. You might be getting ready to stand in some checkout line and they're going to say, hey, by the way, you get an extra 15% off if you sign up for this card today. Well, guess what? You know yourself. You know whether you can say, oh, yeah, by the way, I will go ahead and basically take that equivalent of a coupon, get this massive discount on this item, pay it off, turn around, immediately close the card. That's one type of person. But you also know if you're the type who's going to keep that card around as one of your oldest, most beloved credit cards because it's just how you operate. It's just maybe you're a creature of habit. Maybe maybe it would even tempt you to spend more at that particular retailer because they are regularly offering discounts to cardholders. You just need to make sure that you know yourself and, like Joel said, that you are using credit cards in a way that is going to ultimately net you the most down the road. That's going to net you the most benefit, and that's going to further you along on your journey towards financial freedom.
And the only two store credit cards, by the way, that are the exception to this rule, I would say, are Target and Amazon that I know of. Because those give you 5% cash back when you spend on that credit card at those stores.
Those are
nice some
cards.
People who really, really like shopping at those stores, and I think those cards can make sense. All the other ones are basically crap.
Yeah. And by the way,
even when you use those ones, you got to be careful.
Yeah. Right. I was going to mention our credit cards tool, howtomoney.com/creditcards. And if you are right now looking for a specific card because you are that first type of person that I mentioned, you are on top of it, you're organized, and you're looking for the best rewards, maybe for the best sign-up bonus, head over there, check out that tool. You can click those sliders and find the card that's going to work best for you.
Well, that's a good point because a lot of, in that checkout line, they're going to be like 15% on this purchase of $120. So you're like,
how about a $700 sign-up bonus?
Right.
They're going to give you $800.
The perks sound nice when the clerk's telling you, but the reality is there are way better perks for signing up for a card.
When you take a step back and look at the big picture, and that's right. So that's kind of some bad news, the fact that we're seeing credit card balances on the rise. Some good news is that fewer folks are unbanked these days than ever before. That's largely thanks to the reality of stimulus checks. A couple years ago, many folks out there, they opened up a bank account in order to not have to wait to get those funds in their hands, to have those checks physically mailed to them. And so now we're talking about less than 5% of homes in the U.S. not having a relationship with a bank. And a decade ago, we were talking something that was closer to the 8% range of folks who were being unbanked. And so this is great. Right? Like not having a relationship with a solid bank, that's going to cost you in a variety of ways. Like, I mean, first, folks, they end up using even worse prepaid cards that come with a variety of crappy fees. And then these folks are often visiting some, like check cashing places that charge fees for access to their money as well. We actually included a map in this past Tuesday's newsletter. But there are multiple states out there without protections for victims who are paying an effective interest rate in the 600% range.
Which is
multiple
basically
states.
Unfathomable.
Like we're complaining about 30%.
I know.
600%+. It's mind-blowing. And so we wanted to share this story because being unbanked, it's a major issue, but now it's just actually becoming less of a major issue. Yeah. And by the way, if you're not signed up for the How to Money newsletter, make sure you sign up at howtomoney.com/newsletter before this next Tuesday. That way you get those helpful financial nuggets of wisdom in your inbox.
Not only is it fun and free, but it's helpful too. All right. And basically when you're with a good bank, you've got better options available to you, right, Matt? So folks who are unbanked, they're missing out on the best options, and they basically have to settle for subpar options that cost them more of their money.
Exactly.
And
it's a downward spiral when you are not banking with a good bank out
fees,
there.
Fees, there's all these things, and it's the poorest Americans typically who don't have a relationship with a bank, and it's costing them money because of that. Mm-hmm. And we saw that the average interest rates on a one-year CD are at 1.95%. That stat just came out this week, which is quite a bump in a really short period of time because the average rate was less than 0.5% at the start of the year. So we've seen just a massive uptick in rates paid for savers on savings accounts and CDs. But even though that's the average, the 1.95%, you can easily find a rate that's more than double that, north of 4%. CIT is offering like 4.15% on a 13-month CD. And the cool thing is many of our favorite banks offer better CD products that allow you to opt out without a penalty or to raise your rate if rates do go up. But the starting rate on some of those products, by the way, can be lower. Mm-hmm. But even though rates for savers going up is a great thing, this doesn't necessarily mean you should view CDs as a safe alternative to investing in the market. Like, so much comes down to your time frame, right? If you've only got a year of runway before you're going to need that money, then sure, sock it away in a CD. And just give thanks that rates are so much better than they have been. But if you can leave it alone for more than a few years, then actually investing those dollars in the stock market makes more sense. So for How to Money listeners who are in the wealth building phase of their life, like CDs should be more of a last-ditch consideration, even as rates go up and they start to look more attractive. The truth is, you're almost inevitably going to come out ahead by investing in the market in something like a 7 to 10 year time span.
That's right. That's what history shows us. And although that's no guarantee for future results, as they often say,
right.
It makes me, it's basically CDs aren't a one-for-one substitute for investing. It makes me think of Instacart and how, like, you see the different memes where somebody's like hoping to get some flowers for their wife or something like that. And instead they're like, how about these bell peppers? It was like, no. That is not a clear substitute. There is obviously something that would have been a much better choice than getting maybe the actual, maybe not the arrangement. Maybe you could have gone for the one or two roses. That's sort of what we're looking at here. A CD is not a one-for-one replacement for an investment. It's useful, just like a bell pepper is useful if you're going to make an omelet Saturday morning. But you just need to make sure that you're looking at it with those eyes. And like Joel said, your time horizon, your timeline, that is an important factor to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about housing for a second.
Can I say one more thing on that, by the way? I-bond rates are still better than CD rates. So
it's good
to see CD rates ticking up, but you got to lock that away for 12, 13 months anyway.
And you can't touch it.
You
give up that 1 month's worth of interest.
Which is basically the same with I-bonds. And so, but rates are better on I-bonds, right? Almost 7%.
Right.
So that's still a great place for people to turn, even as I-bond rates have gone down a little bit. That's still a worthwhile place if you're looking to stock cash away for something like 12 to 18 months.
All right. Let's get to the roofs that are over folks' heads, or not over folks' heads, actually, because of the housing market. It's in a weird spot right now. Like, still, because interest rates, although they have ticked down recently, like we said, like, they are still sky high compared to what we have seen in recent years. And so because of that, a lot of buyers have found themselves sitting on the sidelines because for them, affordability, it's becoming a massive problem. And they're waiting, hoping that the price drops will help to remedy that problem. And even if you did find a place that you'd love that's listed for sale, there's no guarantee that you could even purchase it, because we're actually seeing some tighter lending standards that's kind of coming back into vogue, which means that it's even more important to pay attention to things like your debt to income ratio, to your credit score, making sure that your Capital One account isn't, that the bank's not reducing
your credit
limit
at the worst possible time
that's available to you. That's why, like, all of these small things matter. By the way, supply remains incredibly low as well. There's just not enough inventory out there. A lot of folks who currently own a home who have a 3% mortgage, they don't want to move.
Or maybe they do, but they're not going to because
the rates are so stinking
high. I've got this bird in the hand, this 3% mortgage, and if I do go move to that place I really want to be, I'm going to get a 6.5% to 7% mortgage, and it's just not worth it.
Effectively paying way more for that house through that payment. Yeah, it feels like that we're kind of in this weird limbo stage of time. It feels like we're at a standoff.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, maybe if the Fed had started the hard work of raising interest rates earlier, maybe we would not be in this uncomfortable of a position. But I do think that we're going to find a new equilibrium soon. And this is, I guess I want to be encouraging to folks out there who feel that they're in such a tight spot, right? Like, so many of us like to make sure that we're optimizing our finances in a way that where we're always making the best financial decision. But I guess what I want to point out is that life happens. Like, there are circumstances that dictate that we make decisions, even though they're not necessarily going to be the most optimized decision of all time. Ideally, yes, interest rates would be crazy low, and for some reason, housing prices would also be low, and you were looking to move. But that's not where we are right now. But you can't always make life decisions purely based on the financials. It's not all about money. And so for those out there who might be wringing their hands and they're stressed about, like, what are we going to do? Like, we have to move to this new city because of family or this new job opportunity, whatever it is that's drawing you to that city. I guess I want to give you permission, assuming that you can afford the house, of course. This isn't just like a blanket statement that where essentially you're allowed to buy whatever house you want.
Your emotions override the financial fundamentals.
Joel said it's okay. But I do want to give some folks out there permission and to not feel bad if they're making a purchase during a period of time when it does not seem like it's the most wise thing to do, because
right.
They have seen the past. They have seen where markets have been. But the fact is, that's just not where we are now. And so you need to make sure that you're looking at some of those additional emotional life factors as well.
Yeah. And there is the reality that we could see home prices decline further, that this stalemate sort of ends, that we
and we
do,
have seen them decline.
Yeah.
Not a lot.
Just a little bit.
They certainly have come down since the peak back in June for existing homes.
Don't ask me for a prediction on where home prices are going to be 6 months from now or a year from now, but there could be a substantial drop but off when it comes to pricing. But we also might not see that because we are seeing more of those homeowners stay put with those 3% mortgage rates. Mm-hmm. And so it could be a standoff for a while. I don't know. So much has to do with where mortgage rates end up in the next year as well. So there is no predicting what happens, or effectively predicting what happens. I guess a lot of people throwing predictions around, but you need to do what's best for your specific situation and your personal financial situation.
That's right.
Even though the market looks like it's a really difficult market to buy in, and you're not sure whether you're making a smart move, but the longer horizon you have for that home purchase, the more it might make sense for you to buy, even if you're unsure what's going to happen with prices in the next year or two. If it's a place you're going to be for 7 to 10 years, then you can feel confident, I think, making that purchase.
That's right. Yeah.
As long as your income and fundamentals support that purchase.
Yep. You're going to be all right. Just hang in there.
Yeah.
You got this.
But what this really speaks to, Matt, is the need for How to Money listeners to be financially flexible, right? And as economic conditions change, we have to make different decisions. Like, there's a lot of personal finance advice that we discuss that really doesn't change no matter what's happening in the broader economy, right? Like, you always need to spend less than you earn. But there are other things that you probably need to zig while other people are zagging, or you need to change your approach when the economy shifts, when we're in a different economic cycle. And so we're actually going to talk about that on Wednesday's episode, how to further your own wealth building efforts when the economy isn't firing on all cylinders. We'll kind of give more of our thoughts on that. But the housing market is one of those things, right, where people have to think about it a little differently based on kind of the cycle we're in and based on where prices and interest rates are.
That's right. Yeah. So we hope that everyone out there has had a great holiday week. We've got an exciting day ahead of us when it comes to some U.S. men's soccer. Go America.
Right. Yeah.
Go USA. So hopefully you're cheering alongside Joel and I. It's something that we definitely will... Do you like the fact that the World Cup is around the holidays?
I kind of think it's awesome.
Me too. Yeah. Like, a lot of folks are like, I can't believe it. This totally sucks because soccer, the summer, one very much means the other, I guess. And it's kind of weird to have soccer playing around Thanksgiving like this, but I actually really like it.
It's
been awesome.
I don't really watch sports very much anymore except for soccer. And so I know Thanksgiving is a big time for football. Christmas is a big time for basketball. But I'm glad that soccer is going to dominate some of these holidays. A watching sprees, so because I don't really care about the football game that's on most of the time, but I do care about this.
Joel and I are heretics. We're down here in the state of Georgia, and we're not the biggest college football fans.
Yeah,
even though, UGA, my alma mater. From what I hear,
still number one, right?
They're crushing it.
Yeah,
wiping the floor with other teams. But hopefully, Georgia always plays Georgia Tech the Saturday after Thanksgiving as well. So I'm sure
that's not much of a game.
That won't be much of a game, but I'll definitely be watching some World Cup soccer. But we hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. And Joel mentioned that episode next Wednesday, but we've also got a great Ask How to Money episode lined up for you here on Monday. So we'll see you back here then. We'll make sure to link to any of the resources we may have mentioned during this episode up in our show notes at howtomoney.com. And Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
gentlemen.
We are coming back to Atlanta. Right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.